Christian greetings to each one and a cordial welcome to everyone present. So blessing to be here this morning and worship in God's house. And I trust that each one of us has prepared our hearts and minds, come praying, and I trust that this service, as we leave this place, will better prepare us and fit us for the service God may have for us in the days ahead. To get our minds keened up on the subject of this morning. This morning the title is Qualities of Godly Fathers. I plan to use an acrostic this morning and I plan to put it on the whiteboard. But I just thought to kind of get our minds a little bit in this, little bit tuned to this. I did not really find an appropriate song, but the song that did come to my mind is Rise Up, O Men of God. Could we stand? And I'll try to dictate the verses that I would like to sing. Let's stand and sing. The first verse is, Rise up, O men of God, have done with lesser things. Give heart and soul and mind and strength to serve the King of Kings. Rise up, O men of God, have done with lesser things. Give heart and soul and mind and strength to serve the King of Kings. Rise up, O men of God, the church for you doth wait. Her strength unequal to her task, rise up and make her great. Rise up, O men of God, the church for you doth wait. Her strength unequal to her task, rise up and make her great. Lift high the cross of Christ. Tread where his feet have trod. As brothers of the Son of Man, rise up, O men of God. Lift high the cross of Christ. Tread where his feet have trod. As brothers of the Son of Man, rise up, O men of God. Seated and thank you. Happy Father's Day to all this morning, all fathers here present. In Spanish, if I were preaching this message, the word for fathers is padres, and that is a word that would be translated parents. And so in that sense, if I were to have otherwise specified that it, in Spanish at least, that it's only to the men, the women would listen as well, but maybe they will listen anyway this morning. In any case, here this morning, we invite the sisters to listen into what is preached, and what I'm preaching to myself, and I want us to realize that this morning, and to all fathers present here. And there's also that high potential that we have some fathers-to-be sitting here. We don't know, as Brother Mike already called to our attention this morning, what happens in the next 30 years if God permits and time carries on, if the Lord tarries. Who all sitting here may, on the men's side of the house, may be a father. Who sitting here in future days and years may be a mother. We don't know that. It's a little hard to see that from here. But it's good to set ideals, and some of this morning may be, for some of us, a bit idealistic, and yet they're qualities of godly fathers, I do believe. Across our world, there's a sad condition that occurs again and again. I'm going to paint three scenarios this morning that burden my heart as I think about the subject of Father's Day. And I think about men who become fathers. There are fathers, number one, who make themselves biologically responsible for a child's conception. And then, so as to do away with their responsibility, the father or the mother, sometimes both in agreement, make sure that the growing fetus is eliminated before it is born into the world. And that is a very sad thing that happens again and again. And yet, Almighty God does not forget who that father was and when it happened and where it happened. He knows where that child is and who those parents are. And it's something very serious. Another sad condition that occurs in America today and across the world is when a father who is biologically responsible for a child finds out, oftentimes as a result of immoral conduct, that he's going to be a father, that there's a baby coming because of his action. And then, so as to wash his hands of that job, he lets a pregnant lady, sometimes quite young, and deserts her and a child in the world. And that happens again and again and again. One time I was had some legal things to take care of in an office building in Costa Rica. And above the one door it said child support. And I saw a row of about 8 young ladies. And I'm sure we have a lot in our youth group that are probably at least that age, if not younger, sitting in a row. Many of them with little ones on their laps. Some with little toddlers close to them. And they were out to get that father who had abandoned them. In all probability, that happens and happens and happens. And it is not being a godly father. It's not being a responsible father. And sad to say, that type of issues occurs across our world again and again. Another thing that occurs that is sad, and it happens also very often, is when a father sees his responsibility primarily as a provider of income or a source of income for his family and possibly gives them a place to live. But when it is all said and done, he does almost nothing to provide what he can socially, emotionally, and spiritually for the family he is responsible for. And that to me is also a burden this morning, because to be a father includes a lot. It's not just bringing home the weekly paycheck or to provide a business from which the family can receive economic assistance. It is not only that. It is not only providing a place to live. Fatherhood responsibilities require so much more than that. I do want to be careful this morning as I speak about this subject, because the Apostle Paul, in his writings to the churches, gives specific and clear direction to families where there is an unbelieving husband, or in some cases an unbelieving wife. The Apostle Paul was very clear in that does occur in our world, and as churches are planted, and he gives clear direction along that line. And it is good for us to, if we find ourselves in that position or working with someone in that condition, to study those passages and learn what we can. And also, I realize that in our churches, there are people who, because of death, a mother finds herself a widow and needing to carry on with family responsibilities in the absence of a father in the home. And I have a very soft spot in my heart for any need like that exists among us. But that is not because a father has abandoned his responsibility. It is not because something of his own choice and has taken him out of the scene of life. But rather, many times when that has occurred, we see God's divine providence in a given time and place, reaching in and taking a father from a home. And we don't know all the reasons God has for that, but it does happen. And it is something that I want to make sure is understood this morning, that we do understand that there are those needs and those cases that exist within the brotherhood at large. This morning, with the help of God, We want to study what a godly father is like and hold forth some biblical ideals which I trust can encourage us. It is not my intention this morning to scold anyone, but rather edify. And again, what is said, I say to myself, as I still live in the biggest room, that is the room for improvement. With that in mind, I would like to take a moment and write on the whiteboard to see if we can fill out a little acrostic that I have in mind this morning. See how this goes. First word I have this morning, as we think of Father's Day, is fathers, thinking of qualities of godly fathers, a father who is faithful. Faithful. Day in and day out, with the responsibilities of life, with the work, with the training, with the sometimes, some homes, the bedtime prayers, the family worship, faithful, 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 one day, another day, one month, another month, a faithful father on duty, doing his job. The Bible teaches us and says two times about a man in the Bible that he was faithful in all his house. And I don't know what all it means there, but it talks about Moses. It says it in the Old Testament, and it says it again in the book of Hebrews, I believe it's chapter 3 and verse 2. Moses, who was faithful in all his house. And I would hold that up this morning for us as fathers. Think about that. Are we faithful day by day by day in those day in those responsibilities? Faithful in our work. Faithfulness. Faithfulness to the wife of our youth. Faithfulness to our children. We are biologically responsible for them, and before God, we ever and forever carry upon our shoulders that weight and responsibility. Are we faithful to God in that? Are we faithful to our children? When they're good, are we faithful? When they're bad, are we faithful? When they make mistakes, are we faithful to them? It's a challenge to me, brothers and sisters. It's not easy, but we need to be faithful. Faithful men. Rising to the challenge that God gives to us. I would like to add another one. Fervent. What does fervent mean? The dictionary tells us that it means to be very earnest, zealous, and passionate. To be zealous about our job. To be on duty, on call, willing, involved, passionate. Passionate in this case, I would want to make sure we understand, means being excited about the job God has given us. Very earnest. Very serious. And yet, enjoying day by day the blessings that God gives. The Bible teaches us in Romans chapter 12 and verse 11, not slothful in business, it says, fervent in spirit, doing what? Serving the Lord. Fervent in spirit, zealous in spirit, earnest in our spirit about the job that God's given us. It's ever so important. If we just think that it's a nonchalant duty, yeah, well, however it turns out, it turns out. God says, be fervent in spirit. And serve the Lord that way. I realize it applies to much, much more than being a father this morning. Truthfully, it does in that verse in Romans 12. But I think it still applies. Because if that verse earlier said, not slothful in business. We want to be slothful in business and don't want to be fervent in spirit. As a father, it doesn't work real well. Going with the letter A. Adoring. Adoring. Are you a father here this morning that adores God, that has God in his rightful place? Am I one who realizes who the great and high God of eternity, the one who inhabits eternity, whose name is holy, the thrice holy God? Do we realize who he is? Do we teach our families in family worship those things that we were hearing about already this morning, about awe and reverence in the presence of God? And do we conduct with our families that family altar, reading of the word, singing of hymns and praying together? What a blessing that is. Adoring. And father needs to lead out in that. In some cases, mother needs to lead out in that. But adoring, worshiping the God of heaven. I think about altar building fathers. We read about Abraham. He built an altar. When he got to a place and had a little settlement there for a period of time, it says he would build an altar to the Lord. And I realized that that was a kind of thing in their generation. It's different for us today. I full well realize that. But the idea of getting close to God and speaking to God and praying to God and hearing from God, adoring. Isaac was that way. And we want to look a little later on another point about Job. Job was a man who worshiped God and was serious about his devotional life, I do believe. An adoring father. An affectionate father. And there's some children that grow up in this world and have no idea what an affectionate father is. They have no idea what that means. They know dad to be the one that barks when he needs it to be done this way and at what time. And if someone didn't make sure that it happened in that precise moment, well, there's an outburst of who knows what all type of words and behavior. They don't know an affectionate father. Would to God this morning that a godly father, and we would know what a godly father is who is affectionate. I was thinking about who in the Bible was an affectionate father, and I thought about the little story we find in 2 Kings chapter 4. Might just turn there. 2 Kings chapter 4 talks about Elisha and the Shunammite woman here. It's a long story. But she and her husband provided a small room for Elisha to stay in as he made his circuits around the communities where he served. It says here that they decided that they would make a little place for him to stay, a little motel room, if you please. A bed, a table, and a stool, and a candlestick. And I found that interesting as I went to Honduras last year in May for a week of meetings. When I got into the place that they said I was supposed to stay, there was a bed there, very nice bed. There was a small table there. There was a chair there. And there was a little solar-powered light there, because there's no electricity in that town unless it's made by a generator. And we'd take the little solar-powered light, put it outside in the sunshine during the day, and it would burn for a good while in the evening when I needed to study, when the lights were no longer, the daylight was no longer present. Quite a little thing there. They built this little motel room for the prophet. And Elisha in some way wanted to return their kindness, and by divine inspiration, Elisha tells this lady, someday you're going to be a mother. She was a barren woman. She did not have any children. And in the process of time, she gave birth to a son. And this little boy grew up. And one day, as all good little boys want to do, they want to go with dad. And they were out working in the field, it says. Out harvesting the crop, whatever crop that may have been, I do not know, but he was out there with daddy. And suddenly he says to daddy, my head, headache. My head doesn't feel good. Verse 19, and he said, my father, my head. And he said to the lad, a lad, carry him to his mother. He probably needed to continue with his work And he made sure that that son got back to the house to mama. Probably the best nurse that they would have had at that time was mama. And when he had taken him and brought him to his mother, he sat on her knees till noon and then died. But just imagine if that father would have said, "Get tough, boy. Snap out of it. Let's get on the job here." No, an affectionate father. He saw there was a need. He knew there was a problem and said, "Here, go back to mom. Go back to the house. It'll be all right." An affectionate father. The T. Take time. Most precious commodity that you and I will ever have in our hands. Take time. Oh, the Bible teaches us to redeem the time. Use it wisely. We only have so much of it. There's a nice little poem about time, and we only have a minute and only 60 seconds in it, and 1 minute adds to another, and I forget how that poem goes this morning. But the idea of taking time, and it is probably the thing that our children need the most of. Take time. Take time. Redeem the time. Use it wisely. From the time a child is born and even before they're born until they leave our homes, there is only a certain amount of time. And many, many fathers have spent their time doing a lot of things and yet never cultivated the relationship with their children, never took time to listen to the needs and heartthrob of their wives. Oh, brethren and sisters, this morning, let's take time with our children. What is the difference with King David? Why Absalom and Adonijah turned out the way they did, and why Solomon turned out the way they did? The Bible teaches us, and I don't know why it was that Absalom was living right there in Jerusalem for several years, and he didn't go to see his father. His father kind of didn't want him. And yet, whenever Solomon writes in Proverbs chapter 4 and other places, it says, "He taught me also and said unto me, let thine heart retain my words, keep my commandments and live." David talking to Solomon. It seems like he set Solomon down and taught him and taught him and taught him. And you know what? We need to take time not only for one son, not only for one daughter, but for all that we have. It is so important. Take time. Qualities of godly fathers. Truthful. Truthful. You know, the tendency lies with me, and probably lies with some more of us when we have an exciting story to tell, to add just a little bit of color to it. A few extra adjectives. Superlative adjectives, the biggest or the greatest or who knows what, or the fastest, you know. Was it really? Did it really take forever for the boy to get over here with that pliers I asked for a while ago? Did it really take forever? Truthful. Truthful. Honest. Romans 12 also says, provide things honest in the sight of all men, including my wife, including our children. I've had to check myself in this area numerous times along the way. 1 John chapter 3, verse 18, "Little children, let us not love in word, neither in tongue, but in deed and in truth." How easy is it for us to tell one of our family, our wife or our children, "I love you"? Maybe write in a little birthday card at the time of the birthday, "I love you." But do they know it? By our deed and by our truth, when it actually comes out in life, is it evident that we love them? Is it evident that we care? Is it evident that we're trying to be truthful and honest? And it's such a sad day whenever in our homes. In the public arena, Dad can be one thing. And yet at home, he is not what he is in public. His demeanor and his words. Oh, may God help us to not only love in word and in tongue, but in deed and in truth. That it would be an honest evaluation, an honest portrayal of what we really are. 1 Thessalonians on this point also, 1 Thessalonians chapter 4 and verse 12. And we beseech you, brethren, to know them which labor among you and are... See, I must have the wrong verse there. Yes, I do have. It's back here. I was in chapter 5. 1 Thessalonians 4:12. That ye may walk honestly toward them that are without, that ye may have lack of nothing. It's talking about our day-by-day work. It talks earlier on about if a man wouldn't work, that neither should he eat. Study to be quiet and do your own business. Working with your own hands as we have commanded you, and walking honestly toward them which are without. And as I view that this morning, I have to think, a truthful life, an honest life, not only within the home, not only within the church fellowship and when we're with the brethren and sisters, but that there be a testimony that goes out to our neighbors and friends and people we associate with in business, that we're truthful and honest. It is ever so important. You know, it is so easy to, as we're wheeling and dealing, as if you want to use that term, as we're buying and selling and stuff, to really be hard on somebody if we're buying this or that product from them. And yet when we go to sell something, it's got to be the last dollar and the last penny. Are we honest? Truthful? Qualities of a godly father. Humble. Humble. The Bible teaches us in more than one place, and especially in the book of 1 and 2 Peter and also in the book of James, be clothed with humility. Oh, what a challenge that is. Ego and pride are so very, very present with us. Especially men, I think. But the Bible teaches us to be clothed with humility. Apostle Paul had this testimony as he spoke, I think it was with the Ephesian elders there in Acts chapter 20. He says, I have been serving the Lord with humility of mind. And you know, if we're going to be humble this morning, it starts in the mind. It starts in a humble thought pattern that becomes reality in my life about the blessings that God has given, about the possessions that I have, about the work that I do. Serving the Lord. I trust that's our desire. How? With humility of mind. It's ever so important. Clothed with humility, serving the Lord with humility of mind. Honorable. Honorable, very closely connected this morning with what we have in the point prior about honesty and truthfulness. But there's a verse in the Bible that is kind of tucked away in 1 Chronicles. And if you're like me and you're reading the Bible through from cover to cover, you get to the book of Chronicles and it is so many names that sometimes it's hard to find too much there that gives you inspiration. At least I'm speaking for myself. But once in a while, there's a verse that just jumps out, and you say, wow, that's a beautiful thought. And that's just exactly what I found here in 1 Chronicles 4. Thinking of an honorable testimony. A testimony that is consistent. A testimony that is day by day, similar, honorable, as in being, living a life of integrity, living a life which is honor and glory to God, a life that is separate from sin. As we think about that, honorable. 1 Chronicles 4, verses 9 and 10. And Jabez was more honorable than his brethren. And his mother called him Jabez, saying, because I bear him with sorrow. But what did this honorable man, a Bible character that the Bible classes as honorable, what did he do that made him that way? The only verse that I'm aware of that speaks of him is verse 10. It gives us a clue as to why God called him honorable, as the holy word was written. Verse 10, and Jabez called on the God of Israel, saying, oh, that thou wouldest bless me indeed and enlarge my coast, and that thine hand might be with me, and that thou wouldest keep me from evil, that it may not grieve me. And God granted him that which he requested. Now, give us a challenge this morning. If you would like to meditate on a verse this week, on this side of the house specifically, us men, maybe you just want to highlight that verse and think about that verse throughout this coming week. God, I'd like you to enlarge my coast. When I think of that, I think about God providing for the needs that we have as a family, that we have as a congregation, and that thy hand might be with me as I go out to the job, and as I meet people, and as I relate to my family, that God's hand might be with me. Do we need that this morning? And that thou wouldest keep me from evil. Oh, what a challenge in our generation, that it might not grieve me. And you know what God did? God granted him that which he requested. And why else would God call that an honorable testimony? An honorable testimony. Example. The Apostle Paul, writing to Timothy, says, be thou an example. And as I think about my own life this morning, God would look at me as a father and you as a father possibly and say, be thou an example. An example in the way we talk. Because what we think about comes out through the mouth many, many times. An example. An example in the way we work. An example in the way we discipline ourselves to do what we need to do. An example in Bible reading and prayer. An example in our conduct with the ungodly world around us. An example in the way we treat the women folk in the house. An example. We need to be that. I've asked people this question in other settings, with our neighbors in Costa Rica. I used to ask them, if one of your children were to follow your example every day, every day, every day, they would do what dad does. They would do what mom does every day. To what eternal destiny would they go? If they were to talk like you talked, if they were to do the things that you do every day, every day, every day, what eternal destiny would they go to? Let's take that as a challenge this morning, because children, especially young children, follow very closely the example of their parents. As they get older, they're exposed to more people and have more close associates. But as a young child, they very closely follow mom and dad's example. This is a bigger word, one we don't use much. Empathetic. Empathy. What is empathy? It is very similar to the word sympathy. But sympathy often says, hey, wish you sympathies in the parting with this loved one. Wish you our condolences. But empathy goes a step further than that. Going back to Romans chapter 12, and I'm surprised again and again how this passage speaks to us. It says, rejoice with them that do rejoice, and weep with those that weep. That is empathy. Whenever the one that's rejoicing, the child that's rejoicing, the dad can say, hey, you know what? I'm excited about that. That's a beautiful little thing that you have there. Isn't it nice? And rejoicing with them that something good happened to them. But you know what? It's not all that in life. Do tears come to our eyes when something sad happens to them? Do we care about it? Do they know that we care about it? Empathetic. Sympathizing with, and not only that, but weeping with them. Rejoicing with them. Empathetic. A godly father this morning is empathetic. He feels it whenever son has asked now the third girl, and it doesn't seem to be working out. He cares. Mom cares. Whenever that letter comes back from a girlfriend possibly and says, you know what? This is the end of it. I so well remember that happened in my life one time. And I can truly say that at least my mom was very, very, very empathetic. Very. It was quite a time in my life. But are we that kind of fathers this morning? Look at two R's here. Reverent. Respectful. Reverent and respectful. And I thought to use the passage out of Judges chapter 13 when we have the story of Manoah and his wife. Right up prior to the birth of Samson. There's a lot that could be read here. We are not going to read it, and I wasn't really planning to read it, but I was just amazed as I read in this chapter. It talks about how that the one that was Samson's mother got a vision from God. This angel comes down and shows up at wherever she was working and tells her about the son that was going to be born and what some requirements were going to be for him. And she goes and tells her husband about it. In verse 8, Judges 13, verse 8, then Manoah entreated the Lord and said, O my Lord, let the man of God which thou didst send come again unto us and teach us what we shall do unto the child that shall be born. We notice reverence here. We notice respect here. And it says how God hearkened unto the voice of the man, Manoah. And again, the angel appeared, but the man was, Manoah was not with his wife this time either. And she went quickly and got him and brought him there. And Manoah rose and went after his wife and came to the man and said unto him, art thou the man that spakest unto the woman? And he said, I am. And Manoah said, now let thy words come to pass. And imagine the reverence that may have been in this moment. The respect for this man of God who had gone away and then came back again. How shall we order the child, and how shall we do unto him? I realize that that verse right there is a very common sermon title in some settings. I've not used it here yet that I'm aware of. But the idea of how shall we order the child? Reverence. This is a special responsibility that God is putting upon us. How shall we do unto him? Reverence and respect. And then notice that they wanted to give him an offering, a token of something good. And they went and got ready a kid and some broth and whatever else have you there. And then the angel touched that top of the rock with his staff, and the fire went up and the angel was gone. And Manoah began to realize, hey, you know what? That was a man of God. And he was also afraid because what we've seen God's face. God has spoken directly to us. And they fell on their faces to the ground. I notice reverence and respect. But are we as fathers that way this morning? And we've heard challenges already today in this church service by the brethren about being reverent in the house of God and worshiping him as we ought to. Respectful and reverent. Stable. sincere, stable. When I think about being stable, I think about the verses over here in Colossians chapter 2. Colossians chapter 2 and verse 6 and 7. You know, the Bible's very clear about some of these qualities that we ought to have this morning. Colossians chapter 2 verse 6, "As ye have therefore received Christ Jesus the Lord, so walk ye in him, rooted and built up in him, established in the faith." If you take that "established" or "established" in different places in Scripture, you take away all the endings and prefixes, you come up with the word "stable." "Established in the faith, as ye have been taught, abounding therein with thanksgiving." Established in the faith. That our convictions be firm in the Word, our roots deep down by the river of the water of life, like that tree in Psalm chapter 1 that brings forth fruit in its season, leaf not withering, because a person is stable and established in Christ, established in the faith. We need fathers like that this morning. It is a quality we must follow. Sincere. Brother Luke a few weeks ago spoke about the whole subject of sincerity and spoke about how the potters would make those vessels. And of course, if you speak the Spanish language, sincere means sincera, which means without wax. You know, they sell that wax down there that the ladies use on their hard concrete floors. They sell that wax and it's red. And if you have a red clay pot or jar, you can take that wax and make it look just perfect. But you never saw that crack in it. And then you put water in it and wonder why on a given day the water starts to seep out through this crack in the side because it was full of wax. Brother Luke explained to us how that works. Sincere means without wax, without cover up. You know, it's easy for us sometimes as men to put on a good front. You know, we don't want to shed too many tears or somebody would think we're a little sissy. We don't want to let too many people know how bad it's going. Just kind of put on a good front and everything's fine and dandy. Yes, sir, it's all good. But God's not fooled. Are we sincere this morning? Joshua, as he's giving his closing admonitions to the people of God, and as he was about ready to step off the scene of time at 110 years of age, said, "Now therefore fear the Lord and serve him in sincerity and truth." And I think if Joshua was here this morning, he would tell us, fathers and mothers, serve the Lord, serve him. How? In sincerity and truth. I have a few more here. Devoted. Dedicated. Devoted and dedicated. I'd like to look at the book of Job, just two verses. Job, I feel, is a man who was devoted and dedicated. And there's a lot here, too, that we could expound on. But we'll just let the scripture talk to us as it says it here. Job chapter 1 and verse 4, talking about Job and his family. He had 7 sons and 3 daughters. He was a father of 10 children. Verse 4, "And his sons went and feasted in their houses, every one his day," which possibly refers to their birthday, "and sent and called for their 3 sisters to eat and drink with them. And it was so, when the days of their feasting were gone about, that Job sent and sanctified them, and rose up early in the morning and offered burnt offerings according to the number of them all. For Job said, it may be that my sons have sinned and cursed God in their hearts. Thus did Job continually." And I think of a father who is devoted to God and dedicated to his responsibility in the home. And it says there that he did that day by day. It was his practice. It was his dedication to his 10 children. And his devotion to the God of heaven. He wanted his children to know God and live the kind of life that he lived before God. A man who was upright. He that feared God and eschewed evil. And he wanted his children to live like that. And so he was devoted and he was dedicated to the cause of God and his people. And whatever he could do to help them live a holy life, he tried to do it. He prayed for them. And of course, this was Old Testament, so he offered sacrifices too. And it was before, according to our understanding, it was before the Mosaic Law, and probably before there was any priesthood in place. And so he did it as a godly father concerned for his family. Alert. Attentive. Alert and attentive. I think about Noah. And the Bible tells us in Hebrews chapter 11, verse 7, something very interesting about Noah. And a lot could be said about this. But it says, by faith Noah, being warned of God of things not seen as yet, moved with fear, prepared an ark to the saving of his house, by the which he condemned the world and became heir of the righteousness which is by faith. And I think we do well to take notice to this man Noah for at least this reason, because Jesus says in his ministry in the Gospels, as it was in the days of Noah, so shall it be in the days of the coming of the Son of Man. And so as we think about that, we ought to pay just at least somewhat of attention to how Noah conducted himself. And I verily believe this morning that Noah was a man who was alert, a man who was attentive. How was it in that his generation of all kinds of ungodliness and violence, of about any stripe and imagination and loose morality, that he was able to raise three sons and have them go with him later into the ark? How is that possible? I believe he was alert and he was attentive. I verily believe that. He was warned of God of things that he did not yet see, and he in faithfulness, which was our first point, moved ahead with fear and prepared an ark. For what reason? To the saving of his house. And by this he condemned the world and became heir of the righteousness which is by faith. In other passages we read that Noah was a preacher of righteousness. And people have often said that they imagined Noah stopping as he hammered a few more nails in that boat, that big ark, and stood there maybe on that structure and preaching to the scoffers that were standing around. Are we that kind of a father this morning, alert? And then watching, maybe that boy was looking after that messy out there in the crowd and said, son, if you're going to go in this boat, you better get your eyes off of that. Attentive. What are the boys talking about? How are things with mother? Is she telling me something? I have this problem. I get home from work, the mail's up here on the place where my mail goes, up there on the little shelf. You're reading something, well, this bank statement, this and this and this. And my wife or one of the children is telling me something, and I said, what? I'm sorry, I wasn't listening. And then I have to kind of put this down and listen. What are you saying? Did that ever happen at your house? Attentive and alert, watching. What's happening out there? What's going on this evening? What are they doing upstairs right now? Alert, attentive. We need to be that way as godly fathers this morning. Yielded is our last one. Yielded. Romans chapter 6, verse 13. Yielded. Yielded to God. Yielded to his word. Yielded to his people. Blending in as much as we can with the people of God. Romans 6, verse 13, it says the following. Neither yield ye your members as instruments of unrighteousness unto sin, but yield yourselves unto God as those that are alive from the dead, and your members as instruments of righteousness unto God. For sin shall not have dominion over you, for you are not under the law, but under grace. And then we'll jump down to verse 19. I speak after the manner of men because of the infirmity of your flesh. For as ye have yielded your members to servants, yielded your members servants to uncleanness and to iniquity unto iniquity, even so now yield your members servants to righteousness unto holiness. Are we yielding to God this morning? Are we surrendered to his will? Are we desiring to walk in his ways? Is that our desire this morning? And last but not least is yearning. Yearning is another quality, I believe, of a godly father. What is your heart's desire? What is your heart beat for? What's the long-term goal? And I would just like to suggest to us this morning that as we live our lives, that it would be evident by the way we live and by the way we talk that we are yearning for heaven. Closing, I'd like to read a little reading that came to my house yesterday in the mail. Title is Father's Day Obsolete? In 1936, Congress officially designated that the third Sunday in June would be Father's Day, a day purposely set aside to recognize and honor fatherhood. Now, only 79 years later, our government seems to be doing everything in its power to invalidate and discredit the role of fathers. For a number of years now, the social engineers have been attacking the family in general. We have heard them bewailing that motherhood robs a woman of her right, in quotes, to a meaningful career, and at the same time negating the importance of a father being influential or even present in a modern family. And I'm reading here what it says. We had a former first lady writing a book telling us that it takes a village to raise a child. Not, as we had always thought, a committed mom and dad. Then it was decided that same-sex couples had the right to adopt children and circulate, and curriculum was adopted in the public school system to indoctrinate the rising generation in these new social mores, introducing them to such enlightening books as, in quotes again, Heather Has Two Mommies. And now, June 2015, our August Supreme Court is currently taking it upon themselves to rule on the very definition of the 6,000-plus-year-old institution of marriage. If you're a Christian dad, you had better enjoy this Father's Day, because if this ungodly and anti-biblical trend continues, Father's Day may become more like a Memorial Day, a respectful commemoration of that which is in the past instead of a happy celebration of a vital ongoing institution. One of our nation's sorest needs is for loving, caring, involved Christian dads. For a shocking number of boys growing up in these times, the first male figure authority that they encounter is wearing a badge and a uniform. And obviously by then, they're in trouble. Oh, for old-fashioned God-honoring fathers who first of all will honor and cherish the mother of his children, who will model Christ in every word and action before his family, who will lead out in consistent daily family worship and will shepherd his family into a biblical sound, on fire for God, church fellowship and worship. May we as godly fathers this morning take seriously the responsibility that rests upon our shoulders to be men of God and lead our families in the ways of the Lord. I trust that by God's grace and help, the qualities of godly fathers could be evident in our lives day by day.